we will call the meeting to order of the Planning Development and Extension Education Committee on February 13th, 2013. It is 6:03 PM. And Supervisor Underhill, Supervisor Dodge, and Supervisor Skolinski are here. Also Supervisor Decker, myself, and Chairman Booming is excused. Number one, certification of compliance with Wisconsin Open Meetings Law.
We are in compliance. The meeting was posted on the 31st of January and February 5th.
Number two, feature program, expanding our audience using simultaneous interpretation equipment.
Does John?
No, we're good. Yeah, go.
That would be tonight, Barb and Rose.
Yes.
I might just make a call.
Lisa,
do you want? No, I'll be fine.
Are you sure? Because we...
Yeah, yes, please. Go.
It's okay, Joe.
I'm good.
All right. So you want to start asking?
Sure. All right, I'm wondering if there's ever been a time when you've had a challenge in communicating with someone. And I shouldn't say if, when you had a challenge communicating with someone, and if you would like to go around and just have everyone talk briefly about an example where you had a challenge communicating with someone. Barb, would you like to start?
Are you?
Yeah, you should give us warnings about this so we can think about it for a couple of days.
Well, and one of the things is several years ago, Rose and I worked with Hispanic women and teaching them how to garden. And if it wasn't for Rose, I would have had a lot of problems speaking with them because my high school Spanish didn't last quite long enough for me to do this.
Supervisor Decker?
I would just say where I volunteer, some of the children don't speak, so the sign language, they use sign language.
Okay, great.
Dealing with international suppliers and contractors, particularly Chinese, that can be a challenge.
I imagine so. Okay.
I worked last Friday at the Prime Outlets, and there were a couple families that spoke no English, so it was kind of difficult to explain to them the sales and what they were buying. So, it's interesting.
So that's Spanish.
Lots of pointing. Yeah.
Some friends and I were on a train, and there were two girls from France, and they didn't speak any English, and we didn't speak any French, but we were sitting right by them and talking and laughing, trying to communicate, and we wanted to tell them, we're not laughing at you. we couldn't.
This was a challenge or a challenge with language?
I think
any communication.
Okay. I was a district commander for Kenosha Racine, Moeth, Rock, Green County, Veterans of Foreign Wars. I had 30 different posts. I had to attend every post and audit their books and go to their meetings and make sure all the protocol was followed, and that was a challenge.
I went on vacation to France. That was a little bit of a challenge, trying to read their signs and speak their language and get around with another college friend of mine.
I think just being new myself, somewhat still to Extension, but also training new people at Extension, the acronyms that we use are abundant. And one of our new educators just recently, I sent her an email, or all of our educators saying, you know, here's the information you need for your SIPRs. And I get this very nice email back from her saying, I'm sorry, what's the SIPR? Oh, self-initiated performance review. And I apologize profusely because I said, I know, and I still don't know all the acronyms. And we speak in ways that, you know, we think people understand, and they don't.
I was with my wife in Mexico. Thought
that's good.
got on a bus because I thought, let's go soak up the natural, you know, local environment, and got on a bus and ended up, we were going, this was a school bus like thing, going out of town. And I'm like, well, this is not right. So we had to get off that bus, and then I found out how you get on another bus. You just stop them. You get in front of the other bus and stop, and then they stop, and we pulled out the map. And
so you didn't need language at all.
We got back to the resort, and I learned...
Don't leave it.
No. It was good. Everybody was helpful.
I worked at a factory, and one of the employees, or I was an employee, was hearing impaired, so the sign language communication was... I ended up learning some of the sign language, which helped me when I scuba dived. I had some of that sign language down so I could run through some of the letters if you were scuba diving with another person.
Oh, so there you go, because you couldn't communicate.
I need help.
Yeah, help.
I'm scared. We need to go up now.
Mine would be some recent conversations that I'm in currently with my younger sister who lives in Tennessee. We are talking, but we are not hearing each other. I'll leave it at that.
I think that's a lot.
And mine would be, and as I was thinking through this, I have so many, but I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Bolivia, in the southern part of Bolivia, almost on the border of Argentina. And this area that I was volunteering in is very much... Native, the Quechua language is primarily the language that was spoken, even though the official language is Spanish. And so I learned some Quechua words, Hatun Warmi being one, which means big woman, because everybody kept calling me that, so I had to figure out what it meant. But anyway, so I was hiking from one village to the next one, and I ran into a Quechua woman, and she and I dialogued back and forth. Well, she talked, and I nodded and smiled. And she left, and I had no idea what we talked about, but I know it was a good conversation because she smiled when we left. So it was just very interesting, you know, the idea that I had no clue as to what she was talking about, yet it was still a positive experience. So go figure. So Barb and I would like to talk to you a little bit tonight about simultaneous interpretation equipment. Any idea what that might be?
Well, I think you're going to interpret somehow for us, and we're going to listen.
You're close. You all are going to interpret for all of us. And so what we'd like to do, the simultaneous interpretation equipment, we have used probably for the last 5 or 6 years in order for other than English language learners to participate in our programs. And Barb and I will talk more about what that means. But what I'd like you to do now is I introduce you to the equipment. What you have in front of you is what an other than English language learner would use. And I'm saying that now, but quite frankly, if we were in Spain, it would be any other than Spanish language learner. So if you could turn yours on, there's a little click.
Or a little light on off, and all you do is rotate it until the light comes on. And by the way, I should tell you, I sprained my ankle this morning bringing donuts in. I had a donut accident.
Where are you?
She dropped them, and they still ate them.
I dropped them. They flipped over, but they didn't go on the ground. So I picked them up, and they ate them all. Okay, so just...
Yeah, so does everybody have theirs on? And if I talk, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So what Barb and I would like to do is for the rest of our presentation, we're going to pass, this is the interpreter's equipment. What we'd like to do is pass it around and have each of you get the chance to be an interpreter. And actually my master's degree is in Spanish translation, and part of that I took classes in interpretation. We're going to talk about the differences between interpretation and translation in a bit. But what I'd like you to do, when I was learning how to interpret, the first thing they taught us what to do is to interpret from English into English. It sounds easy. So, Supervisor Underhill, since you happen to be closest, we're going to let you go first. So as we're speaking, we're going to ask each of you to repeat what we're saying without using verbatim language. So taking it and repeating it in English, but using different words. Yeah. So I'll start with you. Oh, sorry, I probably hit something.
So can you give an example of that?
Sure. So if I say we're going to start teaching now.
Mike, I know sign language.
I don't want much.
Oh, you didn't have to put it on. All you have to do is put the mic up.
Yeah, you can either, there you go. Then Supervisor Underhill would have to take, we're going to start teaching now, and say, now we will begin talking, or something like that.
Or the class is beginning, or you know something like that. So you don't just repeat us exactly.
And
you're all going to get a chance to do that. Darn right. So if you make fun of him, guess what? It's coming to you.
So, and we're, luckily for you, there's many of us that are going to practice interpreting, so it'll probably just be a minute or two per interpreter, so.
Okay.
You look a little nervous, but don't worry.
I'm not.
All right, so are there any questions about the equipment? Okay, so we're going to let you start interpreting for Barb.
So I want to tell you about how we use simultaneous interpretation. Can you just start talking as I'm talking?
I want to tell you how.
That's what
I just repeat.
Landscape and grounds maintenance this morning, and we have.
What, should I just repeat what you're saying? Or?
If that's what you,
if that's what you have to do, then
yeah,
that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
So we've started reaching out to
Spanish speakers.
And this is a group that we've never been able to reach before. Because they've not been
unless
able to understand the speakers, especially when they get technical.
Okay, I'm going to stop Bar, and I'm going to move this from Supervisor Underhill.
It's like you can't hear yourself, so it's hard to hear.
Amy, do you mind coming to the...
If you're saying anything.
It might be easier.
Yeah, let's
we may have to ask people to come to the machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because it's kind of staticky. And, oh, I've read it.
Because that is very confusing.
Very confusing.
Don't listen to yourself.
So we have many businesses.
There are a lot of businesses
who are now employing Spanish-speaking employees, and including foreigners. And we actually have two brothers who own their own business.
There are two brothers that own their own business,
and they are Spanish-native Spanish speakers.
That are Spanish speakers.
So this is our way of benefiting their business by giving them information that they can use
it benefits
in their business,
and
so that they can help their clientele be better landscapers or take care of their landscapers
or take care of their yards.
Okay, I'll stop Barb again.
Mm-hmm. It'd probably be a lot easier to listen if we weren't hearing the same thing.
Right.
Aren't we supposed to use different words?
You are. So, I'll let you come
so
next.
I think she did a good job.
She put Barb off the hallway.
Well, to be frank, in a true situation, you would have the interpreter in the back of the room.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's too bad the room is set up the way it is. But the rest of the participants would not then hear.
Well, although
double.
We do have it, they don't hear it. We have had trouble with grounds maintenance where they're not hearing it in English repeated, but they are hearing it the interpreter sometimes.
Oh, well, then I wasn't supposed to start yet.
Okay, you want to talk about our small producer's example?
Sure. Several years ago, I was working with Hmong farmers.
My hearing is bad.
We worked with a group of Hmong farmers.
You got a good year?
Yeah, this is my good one.
Okay, go to that side of
it. Okay. Several years ago, we worked with a
group of
Hmong farmers from Cambodia.
Oh, did you see what he just did?
That was
awesome.
That was like an interpretive dance.
That was awesome.
Yeah, we'll talk about
Cambodian,
that.
Cambodian, Vietnam.
And so we decided to do a field day.
It was time we planned on having a field day.
There you go. You're good at trying to, yeah, good. And so we went, we collaborated with a group from Milwaukee.
With a group
and
of
we decided to do a program on extending the season,
to
which
extend
is
the
hoop
season,
houses.
Group program.
counselors.
And so we were, Parb and I were working with the Hispanic women, so we decided to bring both the Hispanic women and the Hmong farmers together to this field day.
Trying to bring them together with the Hmong farmers.
And so we had two interpreters speaking two languages out in the field.
Two languages out in the field.
It was awesome. Thank you. Very good.
That was great.
That was good.
That's difficult.
It is very challenging. This is, yes, it is.
Is it easier to do in a different language?
It is. To be quite frank, once you get used to it, it's because thinking English in English is, it is easier to go, okay, I know it in English, now I'm going to translate it or interpret it in Spanish, and it is. Do you have an ear that's better?
Both ears are good.
Okay, are you ready?
It's just a bunch of hair in the way.
Okay.
So we want to take a few minutes and...
You're ready to go.
Go. So we want to take a few minutes and...
We're going to spend some time
to discuss...
Tell you a little
bit about the difference between interpretation and
translation.
Interpretation is...
Interpretation
is vocal, so it's
is vocal,
speaking and making
you your voice.
Changes from one language to the other.
And you translate from...
The translation is written. Language.
Translation is written.
Good. Okay, we'll switch. Good.
You're sure you did. And you're up for different.
Okay, so a lot of people...
Yo sono giocato a tennis.
Oh,
okay, I'll try the English statement.
Okay. So I just want to expand just
real
quickly on
the differences
between
interpretation and translation.
Translation is always the written word.
Translation is always written.
And interpretation is always speaking. People get
when you
those
speak,
confused.
It's always interpretation.
A lot of people
confused.
Confuse translation with interpretation, but they're two very
many people confuse
things.
Them, but they're very different.
Okay. So now I'd like to talk about the different types of interpretation.
Different types of interpretation. I'll talk about those now.
And actually, if I could have you turn that over to Supervisor...
Yes, Skolitsky.
I knew I was going to bomb it, so I'm like, oh, don't even say it. Actually, could I have you come back? I'm sorry.
Sure you can. I'm speaking some Italian now.
Okay.
This young lady is Italian.
Very good. Okay, can I have you have a seat? I'm going to talk about consecutive interpretation very quickly. What we've been doing up to this point is simultaneous, where what you're...
I tried to make sure she was on.
She's on. So simultaneous interpretation is the speaker is talking, and the interpreter is repeating in the other language at the same time.
I can see how that can be difficult. Try to listen to what you're saying, but then say it differently in the same language.
Well,
okay.
Yes. So very
even in a different language.
So that's simultaneous. Consecutive interpretation you find many times used in a medical setting. Should we turn it over to Supervisor Dexter?
Might as well. I was waiting.
He's going to say something in a minute. He's going
to
say something.
Is it hard to, like... comprehend what you're actually saying because you're so busy?
No, I bet if I'm listening and trying to put it into a different language, I don't say it's necessarily easier, but you're...
you because it's already different.
If you speak another language well enough, you can try.
Yeah, and I of course, don't. So, so it's useless.
Yeah.
Pointless.
But it is... It's
simultaneous
still very challenging to interpret.
It's very, very difficult.
Your mind is going
look
constantly
at me.
Moving.
I'm having a
there are some ethical issues with that person who's interpreting saying what the person is.
We're
going
to talk about that too.
I guess you can see. It's a lot easier to sit over there and laugh and come up here and do it. Yeah.
So simultaneously, you scene is direct. It's repeated immediately
and this lady
after you.
Speaks a lot with her hands. She's very, very demonstrative.
Yes.
I believe that it's part of the
it's
simultaneous
part of
interpretation,
right.
Translation.
Get him out of here.
Fired.
All right, Supervisor Decker.
Good job, Mike.
That's good.
All right, I'll wait for. So consecutive interpretation.
Okay, keep going.
Just close your eyes, it's easier.
Oh, is it really? Because you did such a great job?
Wow. It is used many times in situations like a medical setting.
Consecutive
or,
interpretation
for example,
is used
we've
differently,
used
like
consecutive
in a medical
when
situation.
We haven't had the equipment. And so
or when the equipment isn't used to translate.
What you would do is the speaker would talk, and then the interpreter would wait until the speaker was finished, and then the interpreter would repeat what was said. So it takes
with
a significantly longer time
it takes
to
longer
do consecutive.
Because the speaker speaks, the interpreter interprets, and then the speaker speaks again, pauses, and the interpreter interprets.
Perfect. So I'll let you sit down. We'll turn this off unless you'd like
to.
but what I'd like to do is...
I don't think you turned it off.
Since I made you sit here, I would just like to do... And since you've got a second language, I would just like to do a really quick example of what consecutive looks like. Now, in a professional setting, the way it would work is that the interpreter would actually sit back because it's really a dialogue between the person who's the language learner and whoever they're speaking to. So the interpreter is merely the voice. So what would be happening is quite frankly, the interpreter would probably be sitting back between the two. So for example, I'm a patient, Barb is the doctor. And I don't speak English, and so I need an interpreter to dialogue with her. So the doctor would be looking at me, I would be talking to her, and the language would merely come out of the interpreter's voice. So I would be saying something like, my stomach hurts, and the interpreter would say, but not look at the doctor.
But who do I look at her?
You don't look, it's
oh,
actually,
look
in this
you look
situation,
into outer
the
space.
Interpreter would actually
hang your head
be looking
in shame.
Like this.
There you go.
Because you're incredibly important, but the interaction is between the patient and the,
right.
the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I would say, are you not feeling well?
Sono non male, bene.
My tummy hurts.
Io sono male.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how it hurts?
Just make it
just take something out.
Well, we couldn't save
yeah.
it.
Not like we're going to challenge you on this, Bianca.
That's okay, but that's perfect.
Make
that's
it
perfect.
Up, we won't know, right?
but so that just shows you the difference between what a consecutive interpretation would look like versus simultaneous. Now, we have done consecutive interpretation in educational programs, but it almost expands the program double to the amount of time because it takes so long for that stopping, allowing the interpreter to say whatever needs to be said, and then having the speaker speak again. So the simultaneous interpretation equipment is incredibly valuable from that perspective because you can have this even flow, you can have different language learners, and everybody's getting the same information at the same time. So that's just been really great for us.
So for example, this morning when we were using it for landscaping and grounds maintenance, the interpreters in the back of the room, our speakers were just continuing as they normally would, and so we weren't stretching it out at all.
It wasn't like a Q&A session, like the doctor-patient.
No.
Okay,
no.
This is just your
no,
putting
we
forth
had,
information.
We had 120 people, other people in the room.
Mm-hmm. So you can do it simultaneous because you don't have to wait to have
right.
interpreter.
Couldn't you do something like have your script or whatever written down and the interpreter just read it through the microphone?
Well, we will talk about that.
So I'll just give you a little basic background about interpretation and some of the skills that are needed because quite frankly, just because you know a second language does not make you an interpreter. There's certain skills that you need to have to be a good interpreter. But the way in which we generally work it is, as we said before, generally the interpreters are in the back. And in some cases, they actually have a little screen that blocks the interpreter. Very important that the interpreter can see the speaker, because if the speaker is talking too loud, now I almost purposely tried speaking really fast to see how it would mess up the interpreters, because that's one of the challenges in interpreting, is that if the speaker is talking too quickly, it can be very difficult for the interpreter to keep up. And so you don't want anybody in the back going like this, stopping the speaker. The other thing is that because some of the specific things that we're doing are very technical, you want to make sure that interpreters have the background and the skills to do whatever programming they're doing. The other thing is that you want to make sure that you're not using a lot of slang. For example, I was in a situation where we were interpreting an event and somebody said it's like kicking yourself in the foot. And I'm like, well, how are they going to interpret that? So really important to help whoever is speaking to understand that there is interpretation going on and that you do need to slow down. You need to be aware that somebody's interpreting and you have to watch what you're saying so that that they're able to somewhat easily interpret what's being said.
So you want to share a little bit about what you're experiencing here?
What did you think?
What were some of your frustrations as both the listener and as the interpreter? As the listener, how to?
You know, from my perspective, I was listening to you while then I was hearing, well, whoever was translating. Mm-hmm. And so they were starting to, one was canceling out the other. Who am I listening to?
Yeah.
However, if you were speaking Spanish, I'd have to worry about being there to you.
You're right.
You can't understand.
It's a little different than our scenario.
Right.
Well, when that Italian came over there, boom! There's a bell.
Anybody else with listening? You have to listen, you know, probably a little more intently because you're doing that. How about we were laughing as if you're trying to be the interpreter, but what kind of challenges did you notice as you were trying to reword what we were saying?
Not to get too far behind.
Yeah, those are the things.
Yeah.
You're trying to listen to you while you're trying to think in your head, what am I going to make this in your life?
Yeah.
And we didn't use any really technical terms, John.
It almost seemed like, especially I noticed with Supervisor Day, waiting for that breath. When Rose, I think it was Rose, when you were talking to, like, when is this sentence going to end? Or
so
when is the person going to breathe? Well, so you know when to start, right? Or how much can I remember of that sentence? So if you do a lot of run-on sentences, I'm like, wow, what a nightmare scenario, I would think. Yeah. As opposed to just naturally taking some breaths in there.
Well, it's got to be hard for an interpreter to interpret words that they don't have in whatever language they use.
Right,
and not necessarily, like slang especially, how does that come across, but then words that they just don't have.
Exactly. Barb and I were actually talking about that, especially in Spanish, but in a variety of other languages. You know, you look at the different Spanish-speaking countries, and they have very different words for different things, and so, you know, one country might say that strawberry is frutilla, the other country might say fresa, and so something as simple as that can confuse a listener, because whoever is interpreting is using the language from their country of origin.
And you know, we do the same thing. We say water fountains or bubblers depending on what part of the country
soda
you're from,
pop.
Or soda and pop. Or and don't even think about, you know, British English, which is, you know, totally different than American English. So there's the same kinds of things among the different languages.
Barb, how, like today, because it's a landscape course, and so you have landscapers who are learning very technical, and in some cases very important when it comes to pesticides or something that is an English word that they're going to see on an English label.
Yeah.
Talk a bit more about how
the pesticides, I mean, the labels are the same, the words are the same for, you know, the pesticide words, and you know, they're usually, chemical or product name, so that's not usually a problem. But interestingly, one of the ones that we found is most difficult is prune, because there is no word for that's the same as prune, as in pruning a tree, or and the different types of pruning that we have in English. In Spanish, it's cut. So there's not a specific, you know, kind of word for that. So we didn't do that this year, but last year we had an entire presentation on pruning and the different methods. So even doing not only the interpretation, but the translation of that. So the technical ones are challenging. And one of the things we try to do for the technical things is to try to get the speaker's handouts or outlines, so that you were talking about speaker, you know, can they write it all out and then give it to the interpreters? Well, most speakers, especially extension people, a lot work from an outline. They don't work from a whole written text. And we hope to get at least the handouts or the outlines or the copy of the PowerPoint to our interpreters at least a week ahead, so that they can go through and try to look up those words. And there are horticulture English Spanish dictionaries. So there are some where we know we have a lot of where we have this need for some technical terms. I know the dairy industry, I think, has some too, because there's a lot of Spanish-speaking workers in the dairy industry. But even that, it's still challenging, because quite often, and we've even found this in doing the translation, Spanish may not have a single word, where English will have a single word. In Spanish, it's probably a phrase. So talk about trying to keep up with interpretation. That makes it even harder. And then this morning, we actually, even though we had talked to our speakers ahead of time and said, remember, we have interpreters in the back. Please watch. They're in the center. They may signal you. Try to speak slowly and clearly. We had an interpreter come over this morning, and one of our speakers spoke very quickly and used a lot of scientific and technical terms. And she said, please have him slow down. We can't keep up with him. So we actually went up and said, slow down a little bit. So it's challenging, not only for the interpreters, but as a speaker, when we're working with interpreters, it's not that it's hard, but it's one more thing you have to think about as a speaker. What terms are you using? How fast are you talking? Are you enunciating clearly so that they can pick all of that up?
And most interpreters have special technical areas that they'll work in, agriculture, medical, court interpreting. And so theoretically, you can hire an interpreter with a specific background and then trust that they have the skill set to interpret as you need them to. But I was just going to tell briefly, we've worked quite a bit with some Hmong farmers in Milwaukee, and we were doing a program. And we decided to translate the evaluation. And in the Hmong language, the written language is actually very new. They just, I think it was 1956, they actually wrote down the Hmong language. And so we went through the expense of translating it. And instead of reading and writing down the answers in Hmong, the Hmong participants had their children that spoke English read the English version of the evaluation and then write down the answers. So that was a good learning lesson for us to say, just because you write it down in their language doesn't necessarily mean that you've met their needs.
They understand.
So that was really eye-opening for us to go, oh.
Yeah. And we are now doing some follow-up with the grounds maintenance also. We did do evaluation in Spanish last year. We asked them, could they understand this? Did it seem to be helpful? Could they apply it? We're also doing a similar kind of longer follow-up this year. And I also spoke actually this morning with a supervisor who brought 16 Spanish speakers to last year's class, that pruning one. And I asked her whether or not they saw a change, whether they learned how to prune correctly and were clients more satisfied and all those things. Absolutely, yes, it was very useful. So we do know that this is has been beneficial and it's doing what we want it to. So, yeah, it's been really good.
Any questions?
I had a come back to memory. I'll never forget the case over in Vietnam. We were walking down the road, and we used to give a lot of candy to the local children. We get free candy. We were going down there one morning, and the kids were getting real nervous, and they're trying to tell us something, and we had no idea what they're trying to tell us. And they were very excited. So something's, you know, hey, we got to find out what's going on here. Come to find out, it's like a game to play charades. Well, finally, they explained to us that there was mines in the road down the road a little ways, and they actually showed us where one of the mines were. So, yeah, that was quite an experience there.
Wow.
Yeah, really? They told us where the mines were in the road.
So they were able to get it across.
Yeah, they got the point across. Yeah.
Well, good. And I guess if you don't have any other questions, we'll continue on, and we'll pick those up after.
Yeah.
Thank you for playing with us.
Yeah.
Number three, youth and government policy discussion.
John, I'm going to let you. Do you want to talk about where we've been and where we are? Oh, the policy discussions. Let's do the first part first. Let's talk about where we are in the process today.
Sure. So, as of Monday, deadline for nominations for youth and governance was Friday. We received 229 nominations this year. Last year, 170. So a significant increase in the number of nominations, and not just from one school. I was looking, almost every single school has an increase in nominations, some pretty significantly. So I think from that perspective, that's great.
11 high schools.
Yeah. 11. So the only, out of 12.
12.
The only one that we did not receive an application from or a nomination from this year was Shoreland Luther. Every other high school in the county or that serves the county sent at least one nominee in, if not more. So great representation. Secondly, we were able to get out the 229 applications either Monday or Tuesday in the mail. So all the youth that were nominated within this week should have the application form, which gives them plenty of time to answer the questions and get those applications back in. Teddy and I already have dates on our calendar to screen those down. Last year we received 41 applications. We anticipate with the increase in nominations we'll get more. So we're gonna get that screened down. Our job is to get it down to 26 because that is the number of slots that all of you have to interview over the 2 days that we have reserved, 13 per night, which is a lot of kids to interview. So, and then your job is to get it down to 14. So we think going from 229 to 14 is quite a task. So I guess good luck on all that.
All right, so I emailed the policies that we drafted for your discussion this evening as a result of our discussion last month at this PDEC committee meeting. So let me just review them. The first one had to do with, let me just read it. Youth and governance members will not serve on any committee where they, being the youth and governance member, have a family member on the committee or employed in the department / division of that committee's oversight. But the idea being that if I, as a student, have my aunt who's on working in human services, I wouldn't then sit on the human services committee. Questions, comments? Does that address what we were trying to reach and accomplish? Okay. The second one pertains to those of you here on the committee. That PDEC committee members will not participate in youth and governance interviews if their family member is a candidate in the process. Another PDEC member or the county board chairman will serve on the interview committee in their place.
It works.
Okay.
And that was written broadly enough, not just to apply to the supervisors, but also to the youth and governance members, because we know siblings may apply for the program as well. And we figured that's mm-hmm. a safeguard, too.
Because you two would be considered PDEC members. Okay? Okay.
Do you have in there, okay, so let's say Bianca can't do it. do have in there, I listened to the wording, but is it in there worded that another youth and governance would take her place?
Oh, we don't. That's a good point. I could say, or in the case, or
because you
YIG as applicable.
Youth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Youths.
My cousin, Vinny.
So I could say, or a YIG member in the case of youth.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. For that second one. Okay. It would be appropriate then for you to approve it, and then I would add those to the list of policies that then get shared with the youth and potential youth and governance members. Mm-hmm.
I need a motion.
I make a motion to approve the two proposed policies regarding youth and governance program.
Second.
Okay, we have a first from Supervisor Sklitsky and a second from Supervisor Underhill. Youth and governance?
Aye.
Aye. Committee?
Aye.
And I vote aye.
Thank you.
Anything else on that?
No. Stay tuned.
Number four, UW Extension Director Updates.
Okay, I have quite a few this evening. First of all, I'm going to report on our Community Natural Resources and Economic Development Educator position. We received 28 applications. 6 individuals were invited to a preliminary interview that we held on Monday of this week. Of those 6, 5 were actually interviewed. 1 candidate was not able to make the interviews, just didn't work out, and he pulled himself out. 2 candidates, as a result of interviewing 5, 2 candidates are now invited to final interviews that we'll have on February 26th. I didn't hear as of today whether or not those candidates accepted the interview. I'm hopeful that there'll be 2 there. That would be my goal. I'm hopeful. I think, personally, they're 2 very strong candidates, so I feel really good about that. The final interview committee is Jenny Tunkies as Chief of Staff, Bob Riedel as the Director of Personnel, Kim Bruning representing PDEC, and then Barb and John representing the faculty in the office, as well as myself. They do give a presentation, a teaching presentation, as part of the interview process, so we get a chance to see their teaching skills, their ability to speak before a group, and ask them a series of questions. And our goal would be, reference checks are done and shared by our East Metro Regional Director, and our goal would then be to hopefully make a decision that day on the 26th. So keep our fingers crossed, by early April, we'd have a new person on board.
Do you guys assign the topic to be taught?
We do.
Do they both teach the same topic?
Yes. Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. And they're provided that ahead of time, of course, to prepare. Okay. I also want to share that next month, Andy Yencha, who is our regional natural resources educator, is going to be presenting the feature program on watershed initiatives in Kenosha County. And I sent to you today a link that he shared about an upcoming conference that he wanted everyone to be aware of on the Fox River watershed in Burlington on March 22nd. So that material and that information is there for you. He'll talk a bit about that. He's going to talk about the various watersheds around the Pike River and Lake Michigan as well. So it'll be really interesting. A sort of side note to that, both John and I are on vacation that week, and Amy and Rose being every other month participants in the process because of their part-time nature and sharing their times with Kenosha and Racine, Barb is going to be holding the fourth down for us all. So thank you for that, Barb.
Great donuts.
that made her trip. I don't know if you want to ask her to but she stumbled. I also just want to remind you that I emailed information about the upcoming state WASAC conference, the Conference of the Wisconsin Associated County Extension Committees. That's in April in Madison. If you choose to participate as an Extension Committee member, that's what you would go through the County Board Chairman to request to attend that conference if you so desire, if you plan to attend. I have tonight in my hot little hands the final report of the Country Thunder Music Festival's economic impacts. They actually came to FedEx. I wasn't sure they were going to make it, and they did.
You don't have these emails for
them? Let's not tell her.
They went to such great trouble to print them and put these wonderful covers and things on them. I believe the executive committee,
The executive committee received the executive summary back in January through Kim.
Yes.
And the graduate assistant, Alan, and the professor, Dave Marcoulier, just did just get this finished. I had a chance to do some edits, and here it is. So what I plan to do is to provide Chairman Bruning with copies for all the committee, all the county board, that she then can distribute at the next county board meeting. So you guys will have yours, so you won't get a second one to get those copies. But I wanted to make sure you had those. Then lastly, I want to report that Rose and I are going to be working with Ed Van Tine, the Director of Emergency Management, to update our role in the county's comprehensive emergency management plan. There are two support functions that we have lead responsibility for. One is agriculture and natural resources, and the second one is animal and veterinary services. And that simply means that if there were, depending on the incident or the natural disaster that might affect animals or food elements within the county, how we would initiate the other support units to address what we need to do, whether it is dispose of dead carcasses in the cases of animals, in some cases not so pleasant, but could be as a result of a natural disaster, other elements. So the good news here, and I said was saying to Rose, is that Ed explained to me today that the counties around the seven county region are using a very similar process to update their plans. So there's a lot of overlap, and the language is the same. So Rose, serving both Kenosha and Racine counties in agriculture, is going to have the lead role in both counties. But once she does one, it's going to be a seamless approach to work in the other county, which is a good thing. So.
I have a question. We're a volunteer as a horse barn, and we have discussing fires, because there was that large fire in McHenry County. Are the owners of horse barns prepared for things like that? Because I was discussing with my husband, who is a volunteer firefighter, the issues, especially out in the county, where they do not have water supply, and long driveways, and possibly that you can't even get a fire truck in there. Have the various municipalities looked into that? Are they prepared for that?
I don't know that I can speak as much to the municipalities, although I do know that Colleen Fish, I believe that's her name, has done a lot of work to try to get emergency personnel up to speed on how to deal with emergencies, as particularly as it relates to horses. With Extension, we've done a couple of workshops where we've incorporated emergency management discussions into our education of the equine community. Now, granted, we're only reaching those that come. So I think I can't say across the board that all equine facilities are in the same situation as far as their preparedness, but I do think the work that Colleen has done has been quite good to get emergency personnel up to speed. I know she's tried to meet with particular, I think, the sheriff's departments. I'm assuming that it's also firefighters. I know when they had that, this is a couple of years ago, the accident on the interstate when there were horses. A lot of the responders had been educated to work on it. So I think the efforts are at least in place to probably more that needs to be done.
Just because we have a lot of horses.
We have a lot of horses, yes.
Thank you. Anything else?
We don't, but if the chair would mind, we have a few. Yeah, I didn't put it on there because I wasn't sure how long it was. I didn't, you notice that, yeah, I know, there isn't an item on here for the educators to give an update because we left that off purposefully because we weren't sure how long the policy discussions would be and giving plenty of time for the simultaneous interpretation equipment, but if the chair would entertain, I'm sure that the educators would have an update they would be happy to share.
You go first.
I have like a 2 minute.
I wish I would have my camera for
that. So I just brought kind of where we are, you know, at this point. So for us, you know, our fiscal year started October 1st, so we've just finished first quarter. And right now we've taught 37% of all the teaching opportunities we had planned to teach in Kenosha. So we're at 37%, which is, we're really happy with that. Especially given that two of our, or I should say in Kenosha, one of our main programs closed, which was the Spanish Center. We had probably about 70 hours of time committed to working there. And so we've been working, you know, to find other agencies to fill in that space. And then the only other update I had is we start planning again in March and April is when we start doing our planning for new partners and things. So if anybody knows of any other agencies that would like nutrition education programming that predominantly serve, you know, low-income families in our communities, let me know. That would be really great. We, particularly in the county, we work, I should say west of I-94. We work at the Sharing Center Food Pantry and at Westosha Head Start. And that's pretty much it, unless we get a few random calls and things like that. So that's a place where maybe some of you might be of assistance or thinking of sites that, excuse me, might be interested, but we haven't found or reached out to yet. So that's it for me.
Couple quick things. First of all, last month the our board came in, the executive board presented, and I'd like to say we have our new, potentially new YAR board member, Supervisor Decker, is going to take our open adult spot. If I have the assurance of the president of the YAR board that she will be appointed on Tuesday. So if she's approved by the board, I'd like to publicly thank Supervisor Decker for that. Another thing with 4-H, and Beth has been working with this a lot, but she's actually next door training in some more 4-H volunteers, which we always love to do. But Monsanto presented 4-H, the 4-H Council, with $2,500. What this money will be a set aside for is to support programs and recognition programs specifically. 4-H recognizes 4-H members who do achieve, and this money will go directly towards buying certificates and pins to recognize those members. So we're going to do a big old public presentation ceremony of this check at the Pinewood Derby, which is coming up at the end of the month, which is a great event. So if you ever want to come and watch some kids race some cars.
John, hold that up again. Talk about the memo line. How did we get that $2,500?
Yeah. So Mighty Grand Dairy. So I'm not really familiar with the process, but I believe we have to be nominated by someone to receive the award. And so in this particular case, Mighty Grand Dairy nominated the 4-H program. Monsanto looked at the nomination and said, worthwhile organization, and here's the money. So thank you to them. Thank you to Monsanto. It's going to be used once again to further the program. So we're really excited. And everyone's invited to that night. So. Last thing, and I know Teddy and I will be not at next month's meeting, but I just wanted to let you know a little bit more about the YIG process and how this works, because you will have a lot of work to do if you're on the selection committee, and for the youth members, a ton of work, because what we're planning on doing this year is the 26 applications that we're going to select and forward to all of you, those will all be scanned and emailed to you in two batches. One batch will be for one night, the other batch will be for the other night. We ask that you take the time, you will also get rating forms, take the time before that night to review the applications and fill out the written application rating form, and then there'll be the face-to-face interview form. It just helps the whole process run smoother if you take the time to do that. And I wanna thank you in advance because it is a tremendous amount of work. But honestly, you will see how hard it is to make these decisions. So I just wanted to let you know how that process works. Teddy?
Well, I was just going to add, for those of you who have not done it before, John is absolutely right. The more prepared you come ahead of time, having read the applications, completed the assessment form, the smoother it will go, because these interviews are every 5 minutes, and every 5 minutes a new person is sitting in that chair. And you will get confused. You will get it. Who's the, we ask for the photos. You're going to say,
can you scan them in the colors so we can actually see yes. them?
No.
Yes, they will be scanned. The scanning happens in color on the new machine.
It does.
It scans in color.
Well,
if the youth send us a color picture, it will be scanned in color
okay.
for you.
Because that will help. That would be very nice. So you'll say, why did we ask for your photo? Now you're going to know, because that photo helps committee members remember who was who. Who that person was.
Did we have to fill out
it is.
Yes.
Written things beforehand?
Yes.
I
It's a rating sheet with numbers on it. You just check the box, 1 through 4. So you just check the box, yeah.
And just a tip, and you probably will forget this, but hopefully you won't. If I were you, I would read the applications first, because you need to know where the bar is at, right? If you start rating from the first one you read without knowing where the pool is at, you might either elevate your first ones too high or too low. So to read through them all and then to go back and rate would be good. Remember, the difference between getting in the program last year or not was like 1 point. 1 point was the difference between getting in and not getting in. So every point you assign is really critical to the process.
And it's not always the easiest to read those applications. They all don't have the neatest handwriting either.
I remember my mom looked at it once when she goes, did you really handwrite that?
I think it requests handwriting. Yes.
And we require it, handwriting. And you can imagine why. Why do we require handwriting?
There's an interesting question, Amy, just like, why do you require it? We want to ensure as much as we can that the youth actually filling out the application is the youth filling out the application. If it was typed, it would be too easy to cut and paste from a parent or someone else. Not saying that any youth would do that.
Oh, never.
Never happened. No. But that's why all those applications have to be handwritten. So, yeah.
But don't hesitate to ask us questions. So what you will get, you will only get the applications for the interview night that you have signed up for. And we can actually talk about that, and we'll leave that information with Barb. But if you know now what night you want or don't want, it's March 20. Let me look it up here real quick. It's March 26th and 27th. It's Tuesday and Wednesday. Bianca and Colin, you get to do both nights, so you'll get them all. The rest of you, depending on what night you pick, you'll just get the youth for that evening in your email. And so we'll probably send them to you in batches. Yeah, March 26th and 27th.
I have a human services meeting on the 26th, so I prefer the 27th.
That's right. That's right. You did say that, didn't you? So Aaron wants the 27th. You want the 27th only.
Correct.
Okay. Anybody else have any other conflicts like that that you want to share with me? Okay.
What time?
I believe the committee meets at 4:30, and the interviews start at 5.
And we're done at 7.
We're done at 7.
And we don't discuss that night. So when we're done, we're done, and then the discussion actually happens at the next PDAC meeting in April.
For all of you to have a chance to provide input.
So we do the interviews, but don't talk about them.
Right, because all the points are put into a grid.
Right.
And then we basically bring in the points.
We bring in
and
the grid.
And it shows the name and how many points each youth got, and they're lined up. And then basically there's a discussion on where we drew the line or, you know, whatever. And that's usually put together with us in consultation with the chair. And then that's openly discussed, and that's where the committee would actually make the formal motion to move these 14 youth forward to the county board chairman for appointment. Once again, we just make recommendations to the chairman actually appoints.
I may have a conflict on the 26th. Is that a Tuesday?
It is.
I'm not positive.
Okay. Okay.
Just mark me down. I don't even know if I'll make the cut for the interview, just in case.
Okay. So the conflict may be on
but
the
27th. But she's out on the 27th, so I think I'd be good on the 27th.
Yeah. Do you have any preference, Rick, or can you either night, or does it matter to you?
No.
Okay. So you'd be good. And how about you?
No, I don't know.
Okay. All right. That'll be good. So we'll fill them in, keep you guys on the opposite nights.
One more thing to say about 4-H. My daughter went to the sewing workshop on Saturday. She absolutely loved it. And the ladies that directed it were wonderful. All the ladies there. So
thank you. I will.
And Eleanor just wants to sew like crazy. I'm like, I got a sewing machine.
That's awesome.
And I've been sewing since I was in fourth grade, and I learned a few things there. So
there's a little bit of knowledge and wisdom in that room. Yeah, absolutely. So, cool. Okay.
Thank you for sharing that. It's nice to know that we can hear that positive feedback from our volunteers.
Yes, it was wonderful. All right, let's go to the other room then.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good meeting next month.